Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We are back on Sports Talk this Thursday, the May 1st edition. Got spoiled this week with Sports Talk ending early the rest of the days, but we are going till 8 p.m. this evening as we get ready for an Odyssey special this evening, Odyssey conversation special, I should say, the state of mental health tonight at 8. Mental health has gotten more attention in recent years, but has it gotten better? You can join us as we explore the mental health industry as it navigates natural disasters, personal trauma, and when people recognize that something may just not be okay. Join us for our Odyssey conversation, the state of mental health. That's 8 p.m. this evening on WWL. In action tonight, too, we're going to be keeping an eye on the NBA playoff series. And boy, oh boy, Charlie, Fayetteville, there are fireworks going on.
I'm about to change it to the playoffs because this is a blowout. I mean, I have it on ESPN2 in the studio here, Steve.
Could Arkansas run rule the top team in the nation?
8-0.
Wow.
Right now. In the bottom of the fourth. I mean, the starting pitcher for Texas, and that's been Texas's strength so far this year. They have like a 3.05 team ERA, and they're just getting shelled. I mean, Arkansas's offense, I know, is legit. It's one of the best offenses in the SEC, but if you're doing a scouting report on this Arkansas team coming to LSU next weekend, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, oh boy, this offense is good. Like, really, really good.
Yeah, the like you mentioned, there's a lot of power with this Hogs offense, and I don't think the pitching has been awful for them either.
No, it hasn't. And Zach Root, who's a transfer from ECU, has kind of been their ace, the lefty. So that should be a fun matchup next week between ace lefties with Kate Anderson and Root. But yeah, no, this has been super impressive for Arkansas, a team that's kind of been slumping recently, Steve. You know, you lose back-to-back-to-back weekend series in the SEC, and people start to discount you a little bit, but that's just how good the SEC is. From week to week, it's kind of a toss-up. This Arkansas team, though, I mean, they're flexing their muscles right now.
We'll see what happens tomorrow with the LSU baseball team. They are in College Station to take on Texas A&M. I decided to go to weather.com, you know, check out the what's going to be going on for tomorrow night at the Bluebell Park in College Station. Right now, it's not looking too hot. I'm seeing 6 p.m. when first pitch is supposed to be. Just says 81% chance of rain. And it says strong storms with a red exclamation point, the cloud with rain and lightning coming down. We'll see what happens for the Bayou Bengals. We'll have it here for you, a 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock first pitch. You heard Charlie mention in the Sports Flash that the pitching rotation out announced for this weekend. TBA, though, for Game 3 for the Bayou Bengals. We'll see what happens there. The biggest thing that stands out about the Aggies, Charlies, is a whole bunch of southpaws, lefty, 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 that the Tigers are going to see.
Yeah, and some good experience on the mound as well, Steve. It's going to be a fun matchup this weekend at Bluebell Park. If you're LSU, and I talked with Bobby and Mike off air about this, that they're both in similar spots with how important this weekend series is. And I've brought this up before on the station as well. If you're Texas A&M, you have 6 straight home games. And if the magic number that Todd Walker brought up last night for an SEC team to reach the postseason and reach regional play is reaching that 13-win barrier in conference play. They're right now 8-13. The number tells you you need 5 more wins in conference play before you even get to the SEC tournament. And if you're Texas A&M, you host LSU this weekend, and you host Missouri next weekend. And that's before you go to Georgia. Now, Missouri. I mean, Mizzou is 0-21 in the SEC. You can book 3 wins there for Texas A&M. However, that third weekend, the finale at Georgia, is not a guarantee by any stretch of the imagination. So they're trying to get to that magic 13 number at home. They don't want to worry about, oh my goodness, we're in the final weekend and we have 11 wins in the conference play, or we have 12 wins in conference play, and you're going to Georgia having to win at least one or two games. They want to just lock it up. Hey, we're going to be a postseason team. We reached that magic number. So it's super important for them. For LSU, meanwhile, you're seeing this Arkansas team next weekend. And then you're seeing South Carolina, who's near the bottom of the SEC alongside Mizzou, in the final weekend of conference play. For them, the magic number is a little bit different. Buddy Sanji came on and told us that it could be 19 SEC wins to potentially be a top eight national seed in the postseason, where you host the regional round and then host the super regional round as well on the path to Omaha. I think it's around 19-20 is where you feel safe. So for LSU, you're at 14 SEC wins. To get to that 20 mark, you have to win six of your final nine SEC games. You have three games on the road in Texas A&M, and then you come home to face this Arkansas team that is put on another run, by the way, Steve.
It's not stick.
9-0 over number one Texas in the fourth inning. And then you go on the road to play South Carolina. You have to find six wins in that stretch to, I think, be basically locked in to a top eight national seed. The good news is that they're trending in the right direction kind of late in the season. They're playing good baseball right now. Picking up that weekend series victory over Tennessee was gigantic, and you're feeling good about yourselves heading into the back stretch of the season, the final 3 weeks. So for both teams this weekend, that's my entire point of going on the spiel. It's important for both. For LSU, you're trying to get to that 20-win mark in SEC play to get that top eight national seed. For Texas A&M, you're trying to get to 13 wins to guarantee your spot in the postseason. So both teams are coming in with a lot to play for this weekend.
LSU baseball piled up into the buses yesterday, made their way over to College Station to get a full day of practice in today over there at Texas A&M. Here's what Coach Jay Johnson had to say as the Bayou Bengals headed out to Texas.
Thoughts on the Aggies?
Very talented team. You know, team that played for the national championship last year with a lot of really good returning players. Very familiar with them, very familiar with their roster. Have had a great stretch here lately, and what I mean by that is obviously, you know, beating a couple of the top programs in the country, both on the road and in Tennessee and Arkansas, and played three really tough games against, you know, number one team right now. So, Omaha team.
Is there any parallel between them this year, their start, and your start last year?
I don't know. I hadn't really thought about that. I think anytime you go through a coaching change or transition, you know, like they did, you know, it might take a second, you know, and then, but there was no question in my mind that those guys were going to play good at some point. You know, Ryan Prager has been one of the better pitchers in the league, you know, for a few years. I mean, him and Lampkin feel like they've been there forever. So you start there. I mean, have three really good left-hand starters with Miles Patton. So, and then, you know, lineup, Lavalette, you know, to me, Caden Sorrell is one of the best hitters in the country, no question about it. You know, Hensler, kid from Penn, is good. Harrison, the catcher, has really done well. Really good freshman with Keel. You know, some guys, you know, started playing better as of late on top of that. So it's a long lineup, good pitching staff. You know, have good home ballpark, you know. So it's good challenge. Excited about it.
What does confidence do for a team? That's the ability to maybe teach easier at practice or?
It's everything in baseball. You know, a game that's designed around failure that you have to play. It's the game's designed to play every day. I learned this from, or it was a quote I heard from Chris Peterson, the football coach, is confidence gets you through the setbacks. And I really think that's profound. And, you know, it's more applicable to baseball than any sport, you know, because of the nature of it. And, you know, I've never met a great player, though, or a great team that didn't really believe in their abilities. And so you have that, and then, you know, helping you persevere through adversity, it's everything.
This team's got a ton of lefties, and you just sort of mentioned it. So do we overrate how much of an adjustment that has to be when you're facing a team with that many left-handed options, especially in the starting rotation, or is it a real adjustment?
No, I mean, I think it depends on the pitcher. I mean, even all left-handed is not the same thing, you know, and I would say that specifically even about a couple of these guys, you know, in terms of how you attack them. And if I have looked, and again, maybe it changed a little bit this weekend, you know, you get a game against a guy like Doyle that, you know, he's getting you pretty good. But I think splits wise, we've been pretty straight up, you know, and the ability to match up has really helped us, you know what I mean, to get the right guys in the games at the right times. So I don't really think so. You know, I think we'll prepare for the pitcher. You know, I think the better the team, meaning, you know, your own team or depth of the team, you can kind of negate some of that. But good pitching is designed to be good hitting. And so some guys, and I'm sure we've had games against these guys, sometimes you just got to make it tough on them. Like, you know, I remember last year, I want to say it was Lampkin in the second game. Like, he's eating us up pretty good, and then boom, we put three on a board like that, and then took the lead. And he's a really good pitcher. You know, that juggernaut offense we had in 23, like, we won the first two games there, and we were winning in game three. And then he came in there as a freshman and found a good role and slowed us down just enough, and they won a tight game. So I respect those guys a lot. I recruited Ryan Prigger at Arizona. I mean, he was never going anywhere probably but Texas A&M, but, you know, good kid, been a good pitcher in this league for a long time. And, yeah, just kind of look at him that way. I think we've been pretty straight up this year, though.
That's LSU baseball coach Jay Johnson there talking about the Tigers and their trip to Texas A&M. LSU's posted a 2-1 series victory over the Aggies in each of the last two seasons. Hoping they can make it heave-ho three in a row.
Well, like I mentioned, though, Steve, if you take 2 of 3 at Bluebell Park, winning 2 of 3 from Texas A&M, you put yourself in a really good spot.
We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll switch things over to the NFL, talking a little bit about the draft, obviously focusing on the Saints and the NFC South. We'll be joined by Ryan Roberts. He does a draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports right here on WWL after the break. Stay tuned. Welcome back into Sports Talk, talking a little bit about the NFL draft to help us break that down. Ryan Roberts, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports on the line. How's it going today, Ryan?
Everything's good, man. Everything's good. How are you?
Doing great. Still, you know, digesting everything the Saints were able to do in the NFL draft this year. It took a lot of us by surprise. They held on to all 9 of their picks. And right now, definitely the biggest buzz has been taking the quarterback in the second round, who has been getting most of the attention, which is kind of sad for me for the kid in, you know, the 9th overall selection, Kelvin Banks Jr., 6'5", 350-pound tackle. That definitely is a need on this team. I felt like they were going to go with the trenches, whether it was offensive, defensive line, but it didn't help me from maybe dreaming about someone, you know, like the tight end on the board, Tyler Warren, or even like a Jalen Walker. But in the end, the Saints end up going offensive line, Kelvin Banks Jr. And just curious your thoughts overall on the big Texas tackle.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he has one of the highest floors of any offensive tackle in this class, which I feel like down the stretch, people got kind of bored of talking about him. You know, he was a former 5-star. He's been starting to this freshman year, his freshman All-American, All-American the last couple of years. So, like, he's been a known commodity for a long time. And unfortunately, like, some people just get bored of talking about those types of players, especially if it maybe they, like, his ceiling might not be as high as, like, an Armin Membu from Missouri, so people didn't want to talk about him as much. But I really think that the Saints need stability, you know? Like, I think that's one thing that they definitely need on both sides of the ball. I thought it was going to be either offensive line or pass rusher with that first pick, and obviously they opt, you know, they have the hole at right tackle, and they want to, you know, Talisi Fuanga, who was a very talented offensive lineman in his own right in last year's class out of Oregon State. Like, I think you wanted to find a bookend to him potentially and to continue to build up this team, because unfortunately with how things have kind of figured out, I mean, you're an organization right now that's in some bad cap situations. You need to be able to hit on some draft picks, and I think that Kelvin Banks brings a high floor, physical, has the length, has the athleticism. He might not be as exciting as some other offensive tackles that were in the class, but I would argue that he has just about as high a floor as anybody as well.
I agree 1,000%, Ryan, and that's the word that kept kind of coming up, was safe with Kelvin Banks. Like, everyone thought of him as like a really safe prospect. Also very high character guy. We got to interview him after the draft. Very, very nice dude. And, you know, just as you mentioned, pairing him with Taliese Fuaga, I think is you're getting bookend tackles and back-to-back years of using a top 15 pick on the offensive line. If both of them hit, that is a great commodity to have. Now, my question for you is the kind of plan for someone like Kelvin Banks Jr., who was a 3-year starter at left tackle for Texas. It feels like the Saints, you know, playing Taliese Fuaga at left tackle last year, his natural position is right tackle. That's what he played at Oregon State. So having both of them, you know, leaving Kelvin Banks at left tackle, moving Taliese Fuaga back to right tackle, feels like it could be a good move.
I mean, it makes the most logical logical sense, obviously, for the background you're talking about. I mean, Fuanga was a fantastic right tackle. Funny enough, I just wrote an article about his teammate at Oregon State, Joshua Gray, who was actually the left tackle on the other side, who just went on draft, who I think is a pretty nice value in this class. But I really think that it makes the most logical sense. I mean, some people think it's so rudimentary, right, just talking about, like, switching from one stance to the other. But some guys just can't do it. And I don't know if Kelvin Banks is one of those guys, but I do know that Fuanga has a lot of film playing right tackle. I mean, he's a multi-year starter at Oregon State playing the right tackle position, and Kelvin Banks is a three-year starter playing left tackle. So if that's the decision that they make, I think it's a very solid one. It makes a ton of sense. And I think that overall, whatever happens to this quarterback position, whether it's Derek Carr for the next few years, or whether it's Tyler Shuck or whatever the heck ends up happening there, I do think that you feel pretty good about your offensive tackle position that you're in today.
You definitely mentioned the main man right there, Tyler Shuck. Everybody's been talking about it here. The second-round pick out of Louisville, quarterback. The biggest knock has been injuries and definitely age. So, 25, going to be 26 in September. That's been the knock against Tyler Shuck. But as for his game, what do you like about this QB coming to New Orleans?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to like. There really is. I mean, he's 6'5", right around. He's 220-plus pounds. He's a good athlete. He ran 4.6-something at the combine. He's got, outside of maybe Cam Ward, he might have the strongest arm in this class as well. And I'll say this, like, his it's been a fascinating career, obviously. Started at Oregon, Texas Tech, ended up at Louisville, banged up along the way the entire time, except for this year, right? And he finally puts together a full year, and you see the talent that he has, which once made him a top 100 overall recruit coming out of high school. So he definitely has talent. There's no doubt. And the cool thing is, too, for just keeping it from a positive scope for a second, people will use the age thing as a big negative, and I understand why, but two things to really consider there is, one, the quarterback position has a longer shelf life just naturally comparative to others, and also, I would argue, even though Tyler Shuck's going to be 26, he still has developmental track here because he hasn't played a ton of football. He's been banged up so much, I don't think you're getting a finished product that's just old. I think that you're still getting a guy that a year from now, 2 years from now, can still be a ton better, man. Like, I still think there's a lot of developmental upside there. So if you have a good foundation around him, you trust your program, you trust the coaching staff, developmental staff, everything involved, I do think there's a lot that you can still get out of a Tyler Shuck. So I am excited for the upside. Obviously, there's some negatives behind it as well that you always have to consider, but I do think there's a lot to like if you're a Saints fan, if you trust what is being built around him.
And then the very next pick that the Saints made, they went back to the Texas well, and that's something that Mike Dettillier and I have talked about, that with Steve Sarkisian and how he's kind of transformed that Texas program, a lot of it starts in the trenches. And so you get your offensive tackle, the left tackle for 3 years there, Kelvin Banks. But then in the third round, you get Vernon Broughton, who combined with Alfred Collins, who was, I think, a second round pick this past draft. Those two guys were terrors on the interior defensive line, and they just tore up opposing offensive linemen all season long. But a guy that's, maybe built to potentially be a nose tackle at the next level, I really like Vernon Broughton. I want to get your thoughts on him because it just feels like another really strong pick.
Yeah, so, I mean, Texas with the interior defensive lineman the last couple years has been pretty bananas, man. Like, you talk about, like, Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat, and now what you're doing this year with Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins. I mean, they even had a third guy in this draft as well. So, I mean, their defensive tackle room the last couple years has been pretty crazy, and it doesn't look like it's necessarily slowing down anytime soon. Broughton, out of Alfred Collins and him, Alfred Collins, because of the length that he has and the body type he was moved around a little bit more. Broughton was too. I mean, like, Broughton played some snaps from anything from a zero all the way out to like a 4-4 at times as well. But he is much more a guy that I think you want to keep a little bit more condensed, because the best parts of his game is the dirty work that he does. He's super physical at the point of attack. He can anchor against double teams. He can split double teams occasionally for some tackle for loss production. But, like, this is a guy that I think you're drafting similar to Kelvin Banks in the sense of you want a higher floor guy in this building to potentially raise the floor of the entire position. And I think that's what Broughton brings. Some people will say, 70-something overall was a little bit high potentially, and I think that argument is fine and it's valid. We can have it. But ultimately, that's what I think the Saints are trying to find, is those guys that really do just kind of raise that floor from all over this roster to try to fill in those gaps. And I think that he is a guy that's going to play a little bit more condensed. But if your linebackers are having big days or your defensive ends are getting a whole lot more one-on-one opportunities, I think that you're going to be able to go back to the film after the game and say Vernon Broughton brought a lot of those great intangibles and the small things that maybe people don't always give him credit for.
Broughton brought it. Try saying that a bunch. The other pick in the third round for this black and gold squad, they went to Virginia to pick up safety Jonas Sanker. And while football wasn't great in Virginia last year, at least Jonas Sanker put up some pretty impressive tape.
Yeah, no, Sanker was my favorite pick of the entire draft, to be honest, compared to, like, the value of where he was selected comparatively to where I thought he could be selected. I thought he could have been selected a little bit higher because he's had a great process. I mean, he went to the combine, and the one thing that people were interested in seeing about Sanker, because the film has been really good the last 2 years. I mean, he's made a ton of tackles, been around the football constantly. They wanted to know what type of athlete he was, and running in the 4.4s was a great number for him, obviously. But this is one of those two high safeties that loves to be able to play short zone, buzz down, play some slot reps at times as well. Like, he's a very versatile player, not necessarily like a true free safety type where I'm going to rotate him to the middle of the field and ask him to be a single high guy. But I really do think that this kid is a starter relatively early in his career. He could have a ton of success. He, I think, was kind of one of the more underrated players in the draft, and I think that that was maybe arguably the Saints' biggest value in the entire crop.
You know, Ryan, are you a big draft grades guy? I know that some people, it's a very mixed thing. Like, people either like it and they love seeing, oh, what did this guy give the Saints draft? But others are just kind of looking at it like you got to see him play first before you can even, like, hazard a grade. So what are your thoughts on the draft grades before I ask you my next question here?
So it's going to be sacrilegious being in the industry that I'm in, but I hate draft grades. I actually hate it. I think it's very – so this is my two biggest pet peeves, and they all kind of relatively round about the same point here, is that I hate – or I dislike, I should say. I shouldn't say hate. I dislike when people pound their chest after somebody gets picked in a specific range, and they're like, oh, man, I hit that eval, like, that guy's a first rounder, and I'm like, guys, that's not evaluation. Evaluation happens after the player plays in the NFL, and you see a few years from now if you were right, if that guy did develop into a solid starter or key reserve or long-term backup or, like, whatever you evaluated him as, that is when you find success as an evaluator. And it's the same thing with draft grades. Like, we do it because I think it's a cool exercise to a degree, because you just kind of look back at, like, potential fits and guys' ranges and where you perceive there to be value or not value. Like, I think that that's an interesting thing, but we hyper-focus on so much. Right now, Team X is saying, oh, man, everyone told me I got an A draft grade. It's amazing. But then 3 years from now, we might look back at it and say, like, everyone was just wrong on that draft. Like, they weren't developed properly. They weren't used correctly. It was not a good fit, player X, into that organization. So I really do dislike it. I know I got a little long-winded there, but, like, that's actually one of my bigger pet peeves in the industry. I can't say that.
No, listen, I agree 1,000%, Ryan. And that's what Mike Dettillier and I were saying, you know, a couple days ago, that it's just kind of stupid to give out draft grades when you don't see the player until, you know, the year after. Anyways, but I want to ask you actually about the NFC South, because this one was really interesting to see how people reacted to it. The Falcons trading back up into the first round, giving up a first round pick the next year in 2026 to get James Pierce Jr. with the Rams. So, and I know that, like, it's a little bit of a different value chart than what happened the pick before it, when the Giants had traded up to 25 with the Texans to go get Jackson Dart, because the Giants were moving up 10 spots versus the Falcons moving up close to 20 spots. But at the same time, 2 third round picks for the Giants to move up into the first round to get Dart versus giving up a first-round pick in 2026 for the Falcons to move up and get James Pierce. I thought it was pretty interesting. Definitely questionable value.
Yeah, no, it was. Because initially, this was my impulse, and I was kind of watching it mostly with, like, the volume off for a couple minutes because we were doing some, like, reaction videos. When I saw the Falcons jump back in to take James Pierce Jr. after taking Jalen Walker, I was actually very impressed for a second. I was like, hey, James Pierce Jr. is rough around the edges. He has some question marks, but if you're able to maintain and keep his eyes forward and keep him clean and all those types of things, like if you're really were able to help him mature, I think he's a top 10 overall talent in this class. So like at first I was like, wow, that's awesome. Good for the Falcons. And then I saw the value that they had to give back. Right. And I'm just like, look, there's a possibility that he matures and he ends up being as good as he potentially could be, that upside that we always talk about, but there is a lot of volatility to a James Pierce Jr. He could be as good as he wants to be, or it could be as bad as you let him be, right? Like, there is a lot of – there's not much in-between ground on this. Like, this is a boomer bust player, in my opinion, in this class. I still like the gamble in a vacuum, but I don't like the gamble for as much as they gave up for it, right? So – yes, it is a big gamble. It's a big risk. It could end up working out, but that is a lot to trade for a guy that does have some maturity question marks and some character things that people have continued to talk about throughout this process.
Sticking with the NFC South, I felt like every team, unfortunately, around the Saints, they had a pretty good draft. Tampa Bay, Carolina. Yeah. Just curious your thoughts on what the Panthers and Bucks did.
Yeah, so I've been one of the guys, I don't know if we've ever talked about it on this show, but like I'm not as high on Tet McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona, as some people are. Okay. I think he's a good receiver. I'd be okay with taking him in the mid first round to somewhere in the 20s. Like, I'm good with that value. But number 8 overall was just a little bit too rich for my blood. But that being said, I thought the rest of the Panthers draft was A+. Like, getting the pass rushers on day 2, Skeleton and Prince of Uman Mielin, I thought was tremendous. Kind of working down their entire draft, I thought they hit it out of the park after the first pick. So I looked past it. I'm just like, even if I don't love the Tet pick, that is a great draft. Like, really good job by the Carolina Panthers, in my opinion. And I think Tampa Bay, someone actually asked me a question the other day about the next teams to be in that tier of, wow, that team always drafts well, so they're always good. And I think Jason Light is going towards that right now with Tampa Bay. I mean, that draft, I think it took people by surprise with the Emeka Egbuka selection at 19, but you have to consider Chris Godwin is coming back from an injury. He's 31 years old. Like, there's a lot there, right, as far as, like, the long-term. Mike Evans isn't a young guy either, so they're preparing for the future. But then to get the corners they did at day 2, to get Benjamin Morrison and get Jacob Parrish back-to-back, get David Walker, the pass rusher out of Central Arkansas early on day 3. I thought both those teams really did knock it out of the park, man. So a little bit unconventional for both in theory in the first round, but I think the overall draft for each team, I thought they did exceptionally well, each of them.
I'm so happy Emeka went in the top 20. Now, for Saints fans, it's not a good thing that he went to the Buccaneers, but in the pre-draft process, Ryan, we kept talking about him, and the word that kept coming up is polished, right? How polished he was, yes, as a player. And yes, he was like overlooked because he played with so many Ohio State great receivers, but he was fantastic in his own right. And, you know, maybe at some point he was a little bit overlooked in the process, but at the same time, like, he's an NFL-ready route runner, a guy that catches everything thrown his way. He's going to be, you know, a terror for the Tampa Bay offense for years to come, unfortunately, for Saints fans.
Yeah, no, he's a really good player, man. I literally wrote an article the other day about that Ohio State room that had him, Chris Olave, had Garrett Wilson, it had Marvin Harrison Jr., and I think Jameson Williams had just transferred out, right? So, like, it's easy for a player like Emeka, who's not quite as dynamic as a couple of those guys I mentioned, to get underrated a little bit, and that's what he is. And he's also a fourth-year guy, right, on a team that guys have just traditionally been 3-and-done, you know, at least in recent years. So I think we undervalued him tremendously. And then this year, the most quiet 80-catch, like, almost 1,200-yard season I can remember for a player that goes in the first round, because everyone just wanted to talk about Jeremiah Smith, obviously, right? So it's unfortunate he's been very undervalued, but he's the leading receiver in the history of a great developer of wide receivers, and he's going to be a very high-floor player. So he might never be a 1,500-plus-yard-a-season guy, a guy that's, you know, perennial, you know, all-pro type of dude, but it would shock me if he wasn't a 70, 80-catch, 900,000 receiver basically every season. He's that type of high floor player, in my opinion.
Ryan, now that the 2025 draft is in the books, how long till you start putting your 2026 board together?
2 weeks ago, man.
Okay.
We're in the weeds already. I it's so funny. I always try to get my work done super early, and so I get a couple weeks before the draft so I can just start the game planning. So, yeah, we're already into 2026, and it's not going to slow down anytime soon.
Awesome stuff, man. Always appreciate the time. Thank you, Ryan Roberts from A to Z Sports. Check out his work there, NFL draft and college football analyst. Have a good one, Ryan. Enjoy the night.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk, going to get an update on the college baseball scoreboard and also check in on the NBA playoffs. Be back right after this on WWL. It's the attack of the Hogs in Fayetteville, the 11th team in the nation. The Arkansas Razorbacks have a 9-0 lead over the top team, Texas Longhorns. That's in the bottom of the sixth inning. Two out right now for the Hogs with two on base. And man, oh man, just another night in the SEC.
Yeah, fly out, unfortunately. Oh, okay. So it's not quite in the 10-run rule territory just yet, but it's getting really, really close, Steve.
And meanwhile, the NBA action playoff going on right now, it is at half in Detroit, and the Pistons up 61-59 over the Knicks. You'd mentioned that, Charlie. It's been a really fun series to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the Pistons could have won at least two of the games that the Knicks took in this series. Like, the first game where the Knicks go on like a 21-0 run in the fourth quarter of that game to kind of steal it at MSG. And then in game four, where Josh Hart clearly fouled Malik Beasley and they didn't call it. Or was that Tim Hardaway that made that three-point shot at the very end? It was one of the two. And Josh Hart bumped into him and they didn't call the foul. It should have been a shooting foul. And, you know, the Pistons would have had free throws to win that game. It's been a weird series for sure, but it's been back and forth.
We're going to swing things over to our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line, 504-260-1870. Big Cheesy on the line. What you got for us this evening, Big Cheesy?
How y'all doing? How y'all doing? How you doing, Steve?
Doing all right, man. What's going on tonight?
You know who I was very impressed with in the draft? I might as well be honest. I would have drafted him if I would have known he was just that type of – he had that type of character. It was Will Campbell.
Oh, man.
You know what I'm saying, his name.
Every time you listen to the guy talk, it just makes you want to run through a brick wall. Like, can you? I brought this up in Cheesy the other day that you can imagine Will Campbell sitting in a room with Mike Vrabel, and they would just both love each other. Like, they're just both football guys. I love Will Campbell.
He represents Louisiana, the best athlete to come from Louisiana to represent Louisiana. I would give it to him hands down.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I didn't know too much about him. I didn't know too much about him until I heard him talk at the draft. And when I heard him talk at the draft, I fell in love with him right then and there. I would have traded for him. I mean, I would have traded for him. If I would have had an inside scoop, I'd have traded for Will Campbell. But yeah. I wanted to know, Steve.
Go ahead.
I wanted to know next year, right? Hypothetically speaking, I had asked Charlie this earlier. But next year, who are the top defensive ends or linebackers that we might be able to draft or that's going to be draft eligible next year? Like, you know, because we're going to be pretty high in the draft. And I'm looking at our depth chart right now. I think Cam Jordan won't be here next year. So I think defensive lineman, defensive end is going to be a strong hole for us next year in the draft. And I would just kind of see what kind of names is out there that's going to be draft eligible this coming up draft.
I look at Clemson right away. I know they got two there in Peter Woods and TJ Parker that are going to be at least high first-round selections come next year. And, yeah, I definitely want to continue building with the trenches. And I unfortunately agree with Big Cheesy, the fact that I hope it's not number nine, but I don't think I think the Saints will be pretty high again next year in the draft.
Yeah, Woods is an interior defensive lineman, defensive tackle for Clemson. And then, as you mentioned, with Parker, he's the edge, another edge rusher. Auburn's Keldrick Falk is one to keep in mind. And then, I mean, this is all kind of projecting because anything can change in this college football season. Guys can fly up and down draft boards. But basically, from what I've seen early on, Big Cheesy, the best ranked defensive player for next year's class is Caleb Downs, the safety from Ohio State.
Right, even though it's safety.
Yeah, it's a safety position, so, you know, it's similar to linebacker where it kind of falls off a little bit in value, but apparently he's a superstar stud. And we'll see what happens. As I mentioned, a lot will change. But going back real quick to Will Campbell before we hit this break, is there anyone in this class that you're more confident is going to be like a 10-time Pro Bowler, multi-time All-Pro than Will Campbell?
Right.
From this draft class, I don't think there is.
I got a buddy of mine that is a big Patriots fan, and I've been sending him any clip I've gotten of Will Campbell. He's absolutely gushing. I'm like, enjoy it, man.
He's just fantastic, and I wish him all the best, but I don't even think he needs like my help in that. I think he's just going to be a stud for basically a decade for
New England. Prove all those short arm haters wrong.
It was always ridiculous.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk, and we'll wrap things up for our Thursday night edition as we get ready to head into the weekend. Jones in for some Jazz Fest, myself personally. We'll be right back on Sports Talk on this WWL after the break. Want to let everyone know, tomorrow on Sports Talk, it'll be me and Jeff Nowak. We'll review NFL.com's post-draft power rankings. Why in the world are the Saints ranked second to last in the league? We'll dive into that, plus the latest on the NBA playoffs, and get you ready. Game one between LSU baseball and Texas A&M. Pre-game coverage is 5:30. A 6 o'clock first pitch right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Thanks for everyone to listening this evening. For Mike Dettelier and Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller. Have a great night, everyone, and hope you're doing some great Jazz Fest out there. Looking forward to it this weekend myself. Rain, go away, please. Be back with more tomorrow night, folks. Love you and talk to you then. Have a great night.